On Tech News Today, the FTC probes Apple's streaming music deals, even though Apple is struggling to make those deals. Plus, we'll tell you when you can buy the Oculus Rift. We'll also tell you about Apple's coming search engine. Not really. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, May 6th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And by NatureBox. NatureBox ships tasty and guilt-free snacks right to your door. With over 100 flavors to choose from, like pistachio power clusters and mini Belgian waffles, you'll never get bored of snacking again. Try NatureBox at naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with a journalist who reported. Welcome to the show. My name is Mike Elgin, and our co-anchor today is Mashable tech editor Pete Paschal. How you doing, Pete?
Good. How you doing, Mike?
Great. You're in the Johnny Ive secret location there with the all white all around you, bathed in white. And I can't wait to hear about your new aluminium product. So welcome to the show. You've been an interview guest a gazillion times, but this is your first time co-anchoring. So I'm really excited to have you on as co-anchor.
Yeah, I'm a little intimidated. I got to follow in the footsteps of Christina Warren here, who I know has been quite a great addition to your show sometimes. So she is hoping to rise to her standard.
She is awesome. And you were telling me about how you guys trolled her with a fake Apple Watch. But you know what? We're not going to talk about it today. She's going to be on the show in 2 days.
With her watch, right.
Hopefully an Apple Watch in her case. But that's going to be a lot of fun to check out. And of course, I thank you for trolling Christina Warren so we don't have to. So
yeah. Go easy on her for the licks a little bit because she had some serious issues yesterday with having sharp objects in her hand and all of us close. So.
Well, hopefully there were no injuries. Let's jump right into the news. Apple's Beats streaming music service looks like it's in trouble. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission is investigating Apple over their deals with music labels, even as Billboard reports they won't line up those deals in time for the Beats rollout at WWDC on June 8th. Lucas Shaw is an entertainment reporter for Bloomberg and joins us now. Hey, Lucas, how you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Now, what is the FTC concerned about exactly? It sounds like they're not actually succeeding in making a whole lot of deals with the music labels yet.
It's early. Apple has a history of making these deals at the last minute. So even if it doesn't announce it until early June and it doesn't begin selling the service until late June, it doesn't really need to have the deals in place until the end of this month or even the week of. That's the sense that's what I've always been told by the labels. I think the FTC is looking at it because, look, Apple is one of the biggest companies in the world, and it already kind of controls one segment of the music business, which is the digital download market, which is something it pretty much created with iTunes. Now it's moving into streaming, which is where all the growth has come from companies like Spotify. And so there's some concern as to kind of the types of deals that Apple may make with labels and any advantages that it may have.
Lucas, do you think this is purely just kind of looking out for some concern, or do you think there were complaints? I mean, how did this investigation even get started?
Part of it is due diligence. Part of it is that the European regulators already started looking into Apple, and the sense that I get is that when Europe starts looking, then the FTC feels obligated, and they end up kind of following one another. And then the third thing is that I'm sure that Apple's competitors have been spreading concern among regulators because they're intimidated by a company of its size.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that Apple could, with cash on hand, buy Universal, Warner, and Sony, and still have money left over to buy, you know, Switzerland or something like that.
Oh, it could buy the three labels, Spotify, Pandora, and pretty much it could buy everything that matters in the music industry. The only thing it couldn't buy are the artists who don't want to sell themselves.
Now, it sounds, some of them do. why do you think they're having trouble making these deals? I mean, or at least why do you think it's delayed? It seems to me that, they're probably driving a really hard bargain. And of course, the music industry is really gun shy after Apple stole the download thing
15 years ago with iPod and iTunes. But are they? Do you think they're requesting something that the other streaming music services aren't requesting? Any sort of exclusivity or some other kind of or maybe super low prices or something like that? What do you think the hang up is exactly?
In the previously, there was some hang-up over price. They've sorted through that, where the music industry has said, no, you guys are going to charge at least $9.99, and if you want to go any lower, you're going to have to pay us like you're charging $9.99 and just accept that loss. The hang-up now may be over some of those exclusive deals. Apple has definitely pursued them. I've written about them going after deals with Florence and the Machine and Taylor Swift. You know, the labels say that Apple has gone after deals with several artists on all of their rosters. And Jay-Z's new service sort of screwed everything up for them because he's getting exclusive content from, a lot of the people that Apple might want, someone like Beyonce or someone like Madonna. So I think that's certainly a part of it. And the other is just, the labels are in a permanent state of concern about the future of their industry. And though they view Apple as a potential potential savior, they want to make sure that their deals are good enough that if this Apple service gets really popular, they're being compensated enough.
So, Lucas, if for whatever reason these deals don't happen in time for either the announcement or the launch, is there any other way Apple's...
They can't launch a service without the deals in place. That just doesn't make sense. I mean, I suppose they could, but it's almost impossible. They couldn't sell the music if they don't have the rights.
That was going to be my question. Is there any other way Apple can differentiate here? Is there anything else special about their service, do you think?
Well, they can put it on all their phones and on their iPad and on their computers. That's the big advantages that Apple has besides this limitless war chest of money to spend on it, are its hardware, which almost nobody else has, and the backlog of credit card information and other information on all these customers. That's the advantage that Apple has on Spotify. And why some people expect that it will be more successful than others in offering a pay-only service.
I can't wait to listen to music on my Apple Watch, and sounds like that's not going to happen for like another year or something like that. But I am looking forward to the WWDC event, and I'm sure they'll have something to announce. If nothing else, they may just announce it without launching it. But in any event, it's going to be interesting. And by the way, that's next month. That is coming up very soon. It's not something off into the future anymore. Lucas Shaw is at Bloomberg.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Lucas_Shaw. Thanks for joining us today, Lucas.
Thanks, guys.
All right. More news in a sec, but first let's talk about Gazelle. Now, of course, Gazelle is the greatest place in the universe to sell your used gadgets. Great way to raise money for your next new gadget. But it's also recently become a place to buy pre-owned devices, and I'm going to tell you why you want to buy from Gazelle. They have a category of phones and tablets and so on that they call certified like new. That's, quote, certified like new, unquote. And what that means is that the device is just like a brand new phone. The only difference is that it's a lot more affordable. Let me give you an example. A Galaxy S5, which is not the most recent, Galaxy device, but it is an awesome phone, 16 gigabytes. They will sell one to you for $369. That is an amazing price. Now, if you want an even more amazing price, you can get one of their certified good devices. That's their other category of device. Now, these actually have visible signs of wear, pretty minor stuff, but they work perfectly because all devices are put through a rigorous 30-point inspection. And they're also all backed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. So for whatever reason, any phone you buy from Gazelle, you can just return it after a month, up to a month, and they will give you all of your money back. So there is literally zero risk when you buy from Gazelle. We all have budgets when we buy new devices, and these things are expensive. And so take that budget and stretch it further by buying from Gazelle, because you'll get a better device for the same money than if you buy a brand new device. Find out what your iPhone's worth. Take a minute and go to gazelle.com and find out. And we thank Gazelle for their support of Tech News Today. After years of waiting, we finally have a rough ship date for the consumer launch of Facebook's Oculus Rift virtual reality system, the first quarter of 2016. Addie Robertson writes for The Verge and joins us now to talk about it. Hey, Addie, how you doing?
Hi.
Now, can you briefly review the history of this product? I mean, this started on Kickstarter years and years ago, didn't it?
Yes. So the product as it exists now really sort of started in mid-2012 when Palmer Luckey launched the Kickstarter for it. He developed it, I think, earlier that year. It was a strapped-together prototype. And then the first development kits came out in March of 2013. And then since then, we've just had this kind of steady stream of new prototypes, new development kits, delays. And now we finally have a date.
Addie, do you know if the latest version, the Crescent Moon, Crystal Pepsi, whatever they're calling it, is that the thing that's actually going to ship?
It doesn't seem like it's going to be, but Oculus has said before that it's Crescent Bay, which I did actually just have to think about because they all sound the same, that Crescent Bay is pretty close to the design that they're going to get. It's a matter of sort of upgrading the things that are there rather than coming up with completely different or new features.
Now, Oculus teased an upcoming announcement that sounded pretty major. Any idea what they're going to announce?
So they've teased a lot of things at E3. They've said that gaming partnerships are going to be announced. And one of the really big speculations, besides obvious things like the price, is whether it's going to have a controller. Everyone is wondering this because right now there's really no way to interact with the Rift, and it's the only big headset that does not have some kind of input.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I saw Nate Mitchell's talk at TechCrunch Disrupt today, and he seemed to really strongly intimate there would be a gamepad of some kind, but that it might not end there. Do you have any other sort of idea of how input will take place on the shipping version of Oculus?
Yeah, Nate's speech was really interesting because he said that there are essentially two design paths, and one of them does sound like it could be more like a gamepad, and the other is this long-term design. They've talked before about how great the idea of motion control is, that you should just be able to use your body in VR, but that's the kind of thing that's really difficult to get right. They also acquired a motion and hand tracking company last year, but they have not said anything at all about it.
I think the big deal breaker or deal maker is going to be pricing. If this thing is, you know, $99, which it won't be, then it's going to sell like crazy, would be my guess. If it's $1,000, then that's an entirely different thing. Do we have any idea what this thing is going to cost?
It's pretty nebulous. Last year, though, they had said that they wanted it somewhere in the $200 to $400 range, which would be what the current development kit is. It's $350. That doesn't seem like there's a huge reason that it would cost more than that, but we obviously don't know.
So there's been a ton of activity in this space over the last year. We've seen products like HoloLens and Magic Leap, which are actually more augmented reality. Do we have any sense yet whether, as a mass market device, consumers will prefer augmented reality over virtual reality, or just one over the other?
I mean, nobody's actually seen Magic Leap. I think maybe like two journalists ever have. So that's hard to say. HoloLens, it seems like they just do very, very different things. I really personally feel like augmented reality has more creation and computing applications, but virtual reality is absolutely a better fit for a lot of entertainment and for a lot of visualization. So it's totally possible that you could have both, and a lot of people think eventually they could converge.
Yeah, they do seem to be. I remember, you know, before all of these products and initiatives came out, it was very clear. The difference between augmented reality and virtual reality seemed very clear, and now it seems very muddled. In my mind, the difference is likely to be the fact that if you are in full virtual reality, in other words, if you cannot see the room that you're in, then you suddenly need all kinds of apparatuses or something to keep you from tripping over coffee tables and things like that. Because, again, you're blinded to the actual world around you, the world of sharp objects and things you can trip over. Whereas with augmented reality, you can take the environment into account, and therefore you can just need the goggles. You don't need any sort of, you know, harness or anything like that to keep you from walking into walls because you can see the walls. But that's just how I'm looking at it for now, and it seems to be shifting very quickly. And, of course, it seems to me also that something like Oculus Rift could be made into an augmented reality kind of by just using, you know, by sensing the environment and then putting virtual representations of the physical environment into your virtual world. But we'll see what it actually is capable of, and I'm just curious. You know, you mentioned Magic Leap that nobody's really seen it except a couple of journalists, and HoloLens, which, you know, people have tried. My understanding is that Magic Leap is very much like HoloLens, that it's a augmented reality system that has very high quality sort of imagery and so on, but it doesn't seem as far along as HoloLens, which raises my question. The question is, Microsoft is implying that HoloLens will actually be a shipping product by the end of the year. That's my understanding anyway. Do you think they're actually in a position to make that deadline, if in fact that is their deadline?
It depends on what they want to ship. It seems like if they're willing to work a little bit more on the field of view, which is really the big problem right now, and if they're able to get it up, because right now it does feel very limiting. That's actually the big difference, is that you feel sort of it's just a TV. If they're able to get that up, it seems like they have a lot of the hardware designed, and they seem like they're actually in a decent position.
Yeah. And it's going to, of course, run Windows 10, and Windows 10 on the desktop is expected this summer, but not HoloLens or the phone version or any of the other versions. Addie Robertson is at TheVerge.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at TheDextriarchy. Thanks for joining us today, Addie.
Thank you.
All right. IBM and Facebook are partnering over smarter advertising. Specifically, the companies are combining IBM's web-based marketing cloud with Facebook's custom audiences tool. In other words, IBM's big data crunching of Facebook's big database. Alex Barinka is a reporter for Bloomberg News and joins us now. Hey, Alex, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Now, what are the companies envisioning for advertisers? Are they really after ads that are more personalized? Is that the goal here?
Yeah, the more personalized ads are the goal here. And I will point out, it's not really a new thing in the industry. Facebook has been pushing this for a while. They have this trove of data from what we all, you know, post and like and enter in our Facebook under our IDs. And so they have been kind of trying to leverage that information. What this tie-up really does is basically add this custom audiences tool into IBM's marketing suite of products. So IBM's customers can really easily kind of spin up access to Facebook users, which is something that they've told Big Blue that they really want.
So you wrote in your story that IBM and Facebook, they also plan features for marketers. Do you have any idea what those might be?
Yeah, so this initial custom audiences tool is basically, if let's say I'm a retailer and I already have an email list and I have all of those emails through custom audiences anonymously, Facebook can build kind of a group of people so that the retailer can market directly to them. Facebook also has a suite of additional tools, whether it's embedding Facebook like native ads on different websites, analyzing those things. What the two companies told me ahead of this story was that it's through this new Think Lab that IBM has, which is focused on a commerce vertical. Their developers from both companies are going to come together and say, look, what do our customers actually want? What do marketers actually need? And it all seems to be converging around this idea of how to connect ads and seeing what consumers are responding to from those ads on a digital platform and bringing that into the real world. So kind of bridging that gap between consumer behavior online and in real world, which is what kind of the end hope is for these two companies.
Now, Facebook will be the first company to join IBM's new Commerce Think Lab. What the heck is a Commerce Think Lab?
So, you know, IBM has kind of rearranged their company structure, and they're focusing in on this idea of verticals. IBM Commerce is this new vertical that is basically has consultants and technologists catering to customers in, you know, the commerce landscape. So they're now saying, okay, we'll open this up. We'll bring in other companies like Facebook who have their own very specific knowledge and their own cards that they bring to the table and figure out what we can do together for our, you know, big brand name customers on the Facebook platform. Are there specific tools? Are there new applications that the two technology companies aren't thinking about that their customers want that between Big Blue and Facebook together they can create?
Very interesting. Alex Barinka is at Bloomberg.net, actually Bloomberg.com. Bloomberg.net, I think, is the URL you guys use for email. It's Bloomberg.com for the content. And you can follow her on Twitter at Alex Barinka. Thanks for joining us today, Alex.
Thank you.
Well, after speculation and rumor, Apple confirmed that it has a web crawler called the AppleBot. The company said on a new support page posted early this morning that the AppleBot is used by products including Siri and Spotlight suggestions. The existence of the Apple bot is fueling rumors that Apple is planning a search engine to compete against Google Search. Pete Paschal, you think they're crazy enough to launch a competitor to Google Search?
No, it just doesn't feel right to me. Honestly, this feels like a clarification of, you know, people have seen this in code here and there, and they're just like, well, this is all this is, because we're not interested in that. Everything in every marketing presentation, every time Tim Cook speaks, that's something he makes a very, very clear point that Apple's business model is not Google's. They are not in the business of knowing what you're doing online and trying to monetize that. So this is just kind of something that I think that helps their tools, and they wanted to clarify before stuff spun out of control. But it's Apple, so stuff's going to spin out of control regardless. But I really don't think they're getting into the search business.
Yeah, and I certainly do think that they do want a certain amount of independence. And of course, a lot of the searching that we do today in the future will just take place through our virtual assistants like Siri. And this, in fact, is for Siri. So, you know, I agree with you. I don't think there's any way they're going to come out with an Apple Search product with a capital S to compete head to head with Google Search. But I do think that they are preparing themselves to have independence in the new world of virtual assistant type searching, where you just say, hey, Siri, you know, what's the capital of Idaho? And, you know, the answer won't come from Google Search. It won't come from Bing. It'll come from Apple itself. And interesting.
Well, if that happens, and I don't think this will affect Tim Cook's thinking at all, but they will certainly get a lot of calls from advertisers and a lot of pressure from advertisers to open that business model. Because that's my question when I heard about this bot was, well, exactly how many people are doing searches on these platforms, both Spotlight, like web searches, Spotlight and Siri, and is it enough that advertisers should care? Today, that's probably low enough that they're not. But as you say, you know, these services start to, you know, take up more and more of our search traffic. There's going to be tremendous pressure on Apple to offer some kind of monetization thing. But, you know, depending on who their leadership is then and what position they're in, they'll, you know, probably decide whatever Tim Cook would decide.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Apple is also working with researchers to launch iPhone apps that involve, get this, DNA testing. This is according to an exclusive in MIT Technology Review. The DNA test, which would look at 100 or fewer medically important genes and not the entire genome, would result in data that would be used by HealthKit apps, potentially improving research and healthcare. Each participating user would control access to the DNA data and could share it by granting permission to research organizations or hospitals that support HealthKit. This is a really interesting turn of events, Pete, because it sounds to me like they're trying to have an Apple-supervised process for the sharing of this data. And essentially, they will facilitate, you know, it's going to be just like, you know, any of these other services where they send you a little plastic tube, you spit into it, you send it off, and then they take the DNA from your saliva, and then they gather this data. Then this data will be secure, and then the user, by going into an app, let's say there's a research app and you want to participate in some sort of medical research, you can just go in there and say, yeah, I approve you getting access to XYZ data in my data, whatever, you know, DNA database. And then they will have access to that specific data. I think it's a great idea. And, you know, I've used, what's it called? You and me, what's it called? What the
23andMe.
23andMe, right. That's the one that Sergey Brin's wife is the CEO of. That's great stuff, but it sounds like Apple is not interested in sort of genealogy in this case. But what do you think about this, if in fact this report is true?
Yeah, I think it's a smart idea, and you know, I take Apple at its word that it's not looking to monetize this or become a pharmaceutical company or a medical company, and they're just really trying to help. They have a widely used platform that is capable of accessing analytics and storing a lot of personal data. I mean, it seems like it's tailor-made for these kind of things in some ways. So that is what this is kind of about. But again, it's sort of similar to what we just talked about with AppleBot. And I got to hand it to Apple here in that they've really managed to sort of tiptoe their way into medicine in a way that they're not regulated as a medical device or, you know, medical services
yet.
Yet they have. Yet, exactly. They're towing the line yet they're slowly sort of becoming more relevant to these spaces. So it's an open secret that doctors overwhelmingly prefer iPhone and iPad to do their work on. So it's kind of becoming, you know, iOS is the de facto sort of medical platform for, you know, consumer doctor relations. So, I mean, it's very interesting how this is turning out. Now, like, again, it's all a great idea, but once you sort of get deeper and deeper into this, I mean, the sort of dark side of this process with, you know, malpractice lawsuits and whatnot may eventually bite them, but it hasn't yet. So, you know, good luck.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that they're so serious about making the iPhone and eventually the Apple Watch serious medical devices. And I think the, you know, the big plan is that they just want to make sure that Apple users are healthier. Therefore, they go on to survive and reproduce and breed new Apple users. It's all part of their evil plan, and it's very Darwinian. And we'll see if it works. I have doubts whether the Apple products are going to be serious medical devices within the next year or two. But give it 5 years, and I really think they're probably going to be the gold standard for that sort of thing.
Yeah, and certainly the accessories market is going to explode even more than it has.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Google today announced a new service called the Cloud Bigtable. It's a managed NoSQL database on the Google Cloud platform, and it's being released in beta. Google Cloud Bigtable competes with Amazon's DynamoDB, Microsoft's Azure DocumentDB, and IBM's Cloudant service. This was inevitable, and it's interesting that Google is the laggard in this space, don't you think, Pete?
I'm sorry, what? Did you? I had a flashback hour of the Microsoft keynote.
Yeah, right. The first, the first third of it. That was a long, long keynote.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, but it is sort of an indication that I think Google, certainly not running scared or anything, but I mean, with Azure, AWS, you know, those two services, there's a lot of competition for this space where there really is some money to be made. Whether Google's product is better at scaling, and that's apparently what this is more about. It's sort of after you've done your prototyping and your stuff's out there and you want to scale up, this is the service you want to buy into. But it's, you know, it's hotly contested. And, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, the U.S. Federal Appeals Court overturned a previous ruling that protected mobile phone owners from the use of smartphone location data in court. The 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta ruled that the rights of convicted armed robber were not violated when the police used cell tower location data to place the perp at the scene of the crime. The case is seen as a major test of how well the Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches and seizures holds up on digital devices. Now, this is different from police actually rifling through a smartphone and looking for data in the physical phone itself. This is essentially cell tower data that they got through the cell company, apparently. But still, this is really unexpected to have this overturned. Do you think this is bad news for the Constitution?
Yeah, not in this case, no. I mean, they're kind of using, like you say, cell tower data. And do you remember back in the day when all cell phones had removable batteries? It was the thing you had to do. If you don't want people to track you, take the battery out of your phone. Now that we have integrated batteries, that's less of a thing you can do. So I think it's very commonly known if you have a digital device, a cellular device on you, you can be tracked, even if that thing is off one way or another. So it's like using the cell tower, I have much less problem with that than someone forcing someone, a cell phone owner, to actually unlock the phone, which is now sort of being contested in a few places, including Canada. There's continuums and gray areas, and this is definitely sort of to the that seems kind of okay area of that continuum.
Yeah, and it also has to be said that if courts, in fact, become heavily reliant upon this kind of location data, it has to be said that it could also easily be spoofed. For example, you could easily frame somebody by making sure that their phone was at the scene of the crime, implying that they were. Or if you're a criminal, you know, put your phone in the back of a bus and let that ride around in some other area where the crime isn't taking place, and you've got an alibi. So this is problematic. As a form of proof, it absolutely is not definitive proof that somebody is in a specific location.
Right. But remember, we're talking about police investigations and not an actual trial,
exactly.
Which all that stuff would come at a trial. And it's like, well, all you have is his location. You don't really know the physical person was there. And then you just obviously have to weigh all the evidence. So.
And Jason was just saying that he's got what's called a Faraday bag. It's a bag, okay, that basically shields your device from any possibility of being tracked. And that is how paranoid do you have to be to actually make that purchase, Jason? Well, government crackdown news. France's lower house of parliament has approved a bill that would loosen the rules on the surveillance of terrorism suspects and others. The bill would grant the French government permission to conduct NSA-style mass surveillance of communication. The bill needs to pass the French Senate before becoming law. And I think, Pete, this is going to become law because the French are freaking out after the Charlie Hebdo attacks. And they are really cracking down. And, you know, I guess the NSA is a good model.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the NSA, and you know, if Edward Snowden is to be believed, and all reports, there's no reason to question him. I mean, the line between sort of what's permitted and what you can do, you know, is so thin, and it's crossed all the time. You know, it's like, well, all you have to do is it's literally like a keystroke or a series of keystrokes, and you basically have everything. So even, you know, if you have laws that sort of say you can only do so much, I mean, how effective are they going to be? And how do you enforce them? So, you know, every nation, every free nation is struggling with this. France, if it goes down this path, honestly, if it approves all this, I mean, it should be conscious of like even the safeguards within the law. And I don't know the specifics, but with the situations where it specifies that this kind of surveillance can happen are probably going to be overturned unless they have some very strict enforcement. I mean, we've seen that with what happened with the NSA. You know, they're tasked with the communication had to be with foreign people. But then, you know, there came out there was a lot of domestic communication that got mixed in. So, you know, these kind of things, the lines get blurred once you can just really just do it by hitting a few keys.
Yeah, absolutely true. Well, the European Commission announced yet another antitrust investigation into Europe's $377 billion e-commerce market to see if major companies are blocking competition in the market. The key targets are assumed to be Silicon Valley companies like Google, Facebook, and Amazon. Initial findings are expected in 2016, and a final resolution will come after we're long beyond the internet existing, probably. It takes them so long to get anywhere with this stuff. But, Pete, you know, this is what, you know, some would call, including myself, Europe's war on Silicon Valley. They my own view, and this is going to be objectionable to a lot of people who approve of what Europe is trying to do here, but my own view is that Europe's sector is thwarted by this smothering overregulation of Europe, and so the companies like Google and Facebook and Amazon and others are just cleaning their clock in the global market, and so their goal is to smother companies internationally as well, so that they're all on a level playing field. What's your feeling about this generally?
I wouldn't totally disagree with that point of view. It's definitely this ongoing war in Silicon Valley. They're really on a roll, aren't they?
Yeah.
I would favor, and you know, I in a very broad sense, I wouldn't favor it. But I mean, what China has done in terms of the business model, they basically you know, unleveled the playing field in their own home territory, so that only their home services can compete. You don't have to be that extreme, but I mean, you can obviously heavily favor your homegrown services without necessarily outlawing them as they do in China. That's led to, you know, widely used services like WeChat and, you know, all the stuff Alibaba does. So, you know, you can, there's other ways to do this rather than just sort of fighting in court. You know, it sounds like an endorsement of like what China does. I don't certainly not, like I say, going to say, you know, just outlaw all the stuff there. But, you know, it's you just starting these fights and trying to like, you know, I was struck with when Spain decided to outlaw Google News and media, you know, Google News couldn't show Spanish media. It's like, you know, Google probably just struck whatever. You know, okay, yeah. If you want your media not to be read anywhere else, sure, that's fine. And you know, you're just kind of shooting yourself in the foot. So yeah, I kind of don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either, but we'll see what comes of this. You know, again, it's just a preliminary investigation. They may at some point, you know, it's conceivable that they could at the end of this say, well, you know what? Never mind. We're not really going to do anything about this. So that would probably be a good outcome. Well, we got some more news in just a minute. But first, let's talk about NatureBox and healthy snacking. You know, you're going to snack. And the problem is that if you had junk food lying around the house and you get hungry and you don't feel like making like this elaborate meal, you're going to snack on whatever junk food is there. And that is really, really bad for your health. So make sure that you have really healthy snacks in your house. And the way to do that is to have them delivered right to your door. What kind of snacks are we talking about here? Well, they have all kinds of dried fruit snacks that are really delicious. They have a ton of different types of granola, like cherry vanilla granola. That's amazing. Chocolate chia granola. Chia seeds are super good for you. Banana bread granola, chocolate quinoa granola, peanut butter and jelly granola. I mean, it just goes on and on how much granola they have. And of course, these are not the kinds of granolas that you have like cold cereal. You could if you wanted to, I guess, but you can just grab them right out of the box. They have a bunch of different kinds of popcorn, all kinds of things designed just for kids, including whole wheat blueberry figgy bars, really delicious, whole wheat raspberry figgy bars, toasted cheddar sticks, and so on. They say those are for kids, but come on, let's be honest. These are like delicious for adults, and they have amazing nut-type products. One of my favorites is sweet blueberry almonds. Wow, this is so good. And again, they'll deliver it right to your door. They have more than 100 different options, and you try them, and the ones you really love, you can keep getting, and the ones that you you don't love, you can have those replaced by other flavors to try. So many different flavors. You got to try NatureBox. So here's the deal. If you go to naturebox.com/twit, you can get a free trial of their favorite snacks delivered right to your door. You just pay $2 for shipping. So what are you waiting for? Go to naturebox.com/twit to start your trial today. And we thank NatureBox for their support of Tech News Today. And by the way, I got a whole box of NatureBox right here. And when this show's over, I'm going to have some. Looking forward to it. We'll get some big numbers for you. 82.6 million. That's how many dollars Apple retail chief Angela Ahrendts made last year, making her the highest paid female executive in the United States. And she didn't even start until May. Her pay package is actually currently valued at $105.5 million. A lot of money. Here's another big number for you. $8 billion. That's the dollar value of Chinese drone maker DJI Technology after landing a $75 million round this week from Silicon Valley investors. Pete Paschal, this company is on fire. It's a great company. A lot of people don't know this is a Chinese company, but I think it's interesting that they're coming to Silicon Valley for additional investment.
Yeah. Yeah, very. And I certainly Silicon Valley is certainly more than happily to oblige them. I mean, drones are going to be huge. It's going to be, I kind of wait for the next White House crash to see exactly where this market's going to go. Obviously the FAA is sort of deeply involved here. They're slowly but surely going to, add some much needed clarity to this whole space. And we'll see if it's, that investment is going to be worth it. I strongly suspect it will be. I think the long term drones are a huge winner. And not just sort of the smaller delivery drones and hobby drones that DJI is known for, you know, the bigger stuff that Facebook's doing for beaming internet. I mean, robot and autonomous flight and, you know, all kinds of vehicles, I mean, are going to be the thing. These are the droids we're looking for.
Yes, they are. I'm certainly looking for them. Can't wait till the prices come down, too, because right now they're a little bit on the pricey side. Well, in news you can lose, why go to Disney World when you can virtually visit a virtual theme park through virtual reality? A new traveling service called The Void enables visitors to use a Rapture head-mounted display, a Rapture vest, and Rapture gloves. These virtual entertainment centers are like traveling carnivals, so you have to wait until they come to town. Let's check out their video. Boom. A woman looks around the corner and she sees a magical forest. And this is a Matrix-like scene, where he feels like he's blowing the windows out with simple hand gestures. Looking at the game design. So this seems like really cool. Now, we were talking earlier with Addie Robertson about the fact that virtual reality requires special environments because you can't see the actual reality that's around you. And so one of the ways they're dealing with it here is that they're programming the physical space into the software so that if there's a wall there, you see a wall in virtual reality. Essentially simulating augmented reality. Anyway, this looks really, really amazing. And of course, they're going to be able to put processing power and use expensive equipment because this is a, it's not a rental service. You go and you, you know, it's like a paintball thing or, you know, theme park, whatever. But this looks really, really cool.
It looks really, really amazing. And I love this video, but really, I'm kind of tired of VR and AR companies showing these videos, which I almost guarantee overpromise.
Yeah.
You know, like this looks awesome.
Yeah.
I have not tried this device, but it's going to be hard to sell it when it's really on. And so, you know, like I had this experience with the HoloLens, and Addy brought it up while we were talking in that, you know, all of Microsoft's literature shows you you're kind of surrounded and you're on Mars and you're there's stuff all around you. And then you, when I tried it on at Microsoft Build last week, it's a window. It's, yeah. Oh, okay. And if I move my head, the holograms disappear. You know, everyone wrote about that aspect. I wrote that while that's disappointing, you kind of see the value of it after, but it is disappointing. So, you know, I hope this Rapture vest and thing does it, but I strongly suspect there's going to be like, oh, it's not quite what I was promised.
Yeah. But it'll be better than Disney World. Of that, I can promise you.
You know, I got to say, Disney World, I mean, you know, they've done okay in terms of like forward-looking technology, though. Yeah. I'll give them credit. Like their bracelets.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's like aspects of the Apple Watch had already been realized by them. It's, you know, they with a beacon-like system. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Absolutely. And let us know what you think about virtual and augmented reality and specifically this kind of traveling circus of virtual reality. Send email to tnt@twit.tv. We want to hear from you. Our TNT fan of the day is Tim Wells of Marietta, Ohio, again. Tim was our fan of the day on Monday when he posted a picture of himself watching the show on an airplane on his way out to California. And yesterday he came in and watched as part of our audience here in the Brick House. Let us know how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. And we'd love to see it. Love to see how you watch or listen. Well, Pete Paschal, what are you working on these days and where the heck can people read all about it?
Well, we are working on lots of stuff about the Apple Watch, what sort of things we might be able to do on Oculus and what sort of things it's probably not that good for. And, you know, all the other good news that, you know, we've just been talking about over here at Mashable. And that's at Mashable.com.
All right. And you can follow Pete at Pete Paschal on Twitter as well. Thank you so much, Pete. I'd love to have you on very soon again.
Sure thing. Maybe next time in your HoloLens app.
Yeah, we'll do the whole show virtually. We'll all do it from home in our pajamas. Won't that be fun? All right, Pete. Well, thanks again, and take care.
My pleasure. Take care.
All right. You can subscribe, and you should subscribe to Tech News Today on TuneIn. That's for the audio version. Or you can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can also watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv. And if you're ever in Sonoma County, California, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience. Just send email to tickets@twit.tv before you come in. If you'd like to help us grow our audience, here's how you can do it. Just post a link to twit.tv/TNT on the social media site of your choice. Tag 3 friends and recommend that they subscribe. Help us spread the joy. Follow us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV. You can also subscribe to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. You can follow me personally on Twitter. Just go to twitter.com and find me at Mike Elgin. Also, don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. And that is the Tech News Today. The show was produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.